Hello, and welcome to another Fool's Daily. I'm joined once again by Rich.
Hi.
And today we're going to talk a bit more in depth about the War Machine half of the Privateer Press game War Machine and Hordes.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of those things where I've enjoyed playing both sides, so Hordes and War Machine. So,
you see, I've had three goes with War Machine, and I've never really gone on with it. Play Hordes, fine. I don't know.
I think it comes down possibly to where you start with. I started with Hordes, but I'm about to give War Machine another go because I've over the course I've owned Scorn, Legion, Circle, Trolls.
Which for those not to know is most of the Hordes.
Most of the Hordes factions, and then on the other side I've owned Kador, Menoth, Krix, and I'm about to get into Signar.
I started out with Legion because I just like the beasts, but then I dabbled in Krix, and then I had some a mercenary force for a bit, and then I quickly dabbled in Menoth, and then they all went, and I went back to concentrating on Legion.
Yeah, so I'm kind of one project sold to purchase another project kind of deal. So yeah, I'm absolutely. But I mean, I personally found that whichever I'm playing, the other one looks more appealing.
That looks so much better.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Absolutely. So, you know, anyway. So.
Let's talk War Machine.
Okay, where do you want to start?
Well, should we start with we did an intro sometime earlier that will have been played out. But let's just talk about actually the range of the models in the game and how they're grouped or how we differentiate them. And we said during that show that your prime model is someone we'll call a war caster, because we're talking War Machine. And this is your prime, your boss model, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Your leader, effectively. The general of your army is your war caster. And they come in, I mean, you get sort of support war casters who are good at sort of like helping out your other stuff. You get ones that can do it themselves, who are kind of good at being sort of up close and fighty, for want of a better description. And then
yeah, I mean, certainly your warcaster kind of dictates the style of force that you're going to play in an individual game. But each faction has a wide variety of warcasters, so that you can play each faction can play each type of game.
Yeah,
to a certain lesser or greater degree, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some factions possibly lend themselves more to one style of play than others, but again, it can all work. So it's one of those nice things. I mean, the game is generally, I find, very well balanced in that everybody has access to something that's very good, or, you know, heavily armoured, or whatever it happens to be, within the style of their faction. So, kind of everybody has their own sort of abilities and tricks that they can use effectively.
Yeah. Which is the caster is your special model. They generally have spells, so they have abilities they can cast either on themselves or on the enemy.
Yep.
And they also have the thing called a feat, don't they?
Yeah, they have a once a game special ability that vary wildly in sort of like effect and whatever it happens to be, whether it's destruction or whether it's control or buff or debuff, whatever it happens to be. There's kind of, I mean, there's a huge variety of feats in the game now.
Yeah, but it's that's the one big thing that can turn a game for you or certainly keep you in a game if it's a defensive style feat.
Yeah, absolutely. The feat can be game changing, and it's designed to be. They're all interesting. They're all kind of they tend to be bigger and better than the spells that are available and stuff like that. So whether it's increasing how heavily armored your guys are for a turn, or whether it's slowing the other guys down for a turn, or whatever it happens to be.
There are some good ones out there. So that's your caster. What else? What other sort of style of models will we have in the game?
I think probably from caster we should go to Warjacks, which I think, you know, with the big sort of steam-powered fighty robots, which is usually the thing that draws people into the game. It's the Warjacks and the Warbeasts that are those kind of really impressive-looking figures.
I mean, they are. These are the big models, aren't they, that stand 10, 12 centimetres tall, don't they?
Yeah.
On average, I would say, something like that. And they tend to be quite chunky. Yeah. And these are kind of connected to your Warcaster, aren't
they? Yeah, your Warcaster has a battle group. And one of the things that they did is that they gave you some free points. So each Warcaster comes with a set number of Warjack points, which are additional points that you can spend only on Warjacks in your battle group, which was a great idea to sort of encourage people to include Warjacks in their force, because they are, you know, the Warjacks, the evocative thing about the sort of setting of Hordes.
But they're unique. The unique pull of the game system, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's where it gets its kind of steampunk type sort of imagery from. Because a lot of things in the game are steam powered. It's that kind of sort of setting.
Yeah. And from the Warjacks, we then move on to probably infantry, I guess.
Yeah. You get units of infantry of varying sizes. You get sort of like some. You can get small and medium-based infantry. There is now cavalry. There's been cavalry in the game for a while, so there's sort of cavalry models as well. So there's all those things that kind of you would expect sort of from any fantasy game.
Yeah, and these go around in sort of blobs with a coherency range and vary between 6 and 10 to 12 models per unit, don't they?
Yeah.
For the foot infantry and up to 5 for your cavalry generally, isn't it?
I mean, some units you can buy additional weapons for, so what they call weapon attachments, which are additional guys with slightly different weapons, or you can buy a unit attachment, which tends to be a leader and a standard or something like that, which gives the unit an additional ability for the points cost you pay for them.
Yeah, and basically, they're there to help out, and they make the unit do something extra special, generally, or an extra little ability.
Yeah, I think what is generally referred to as a mini feat.
Yeah,
It gives them a sort of like it can give them a once a game ability.
And then the last sort of small base thing that we think is something called solos.
Yeah, I suppose this is equivalent to like hero level characters. In sort of Warhammer, if you imagine that your Warcaster is like your lord level character, then the solos are kind of like those hero sort of choices. And they come in, a wide variety of differences, but they're single models on their own that aren't bound by having to stay near anybody in particular or any of those kind
of things. They may have abilities that will help all units as well if they're in certain ranges of them. So basically all the models do actually sort of build together and blend together and can sort of buff or help each other out. Then that's all part core of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. The sort of the mutual support aspect is inbuilt.
And so that comes out as when you're building lists, you're looking at, I pick my caster and it does this particular thing very well, I can pick jacks, warjacks and units and solos that are going to help increase his abilities and boost them all up and make a coherent force.
Yeah, so you might have a unit of guys that sort of like shoot. I'm thinking Greaves of a unit of crossbowmen, effectively, is what I'm thinking of. And then there's a solo that gives them an additional ability that helps them to shoot through like forests and woods and things. If those figures are in the command range of the solo, so that's
which is never a bad thing, is it?
No, no, not at all. I mean, it's an example of how units can buff each other, and it tends to be solos that give units sort of extra abilities.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's sort of roughly covered. I suppose the last thing we should say is the pretty recent introduction of the huge base models.
Yeah, over the last, it's got to be probably a couple of years now, they introduced huge base models in the form of battle engines.
Yeah.
And then
I suppose when we say huge base, we should say it's about the size of a CD.
Yeah, I think 120mm.
120mm, yeah.
Is what they class as a huge based models. So battle engines, which tend to be guys on things like war wagons, or there's a electric lightning bolt walker type thing, which I'm particularly looking to getting forward to. and then there are colossals for the war machine side as well.
Which are really big stompy robots.
Really big stompy robots. But I mean, actually, it was Mike at an event made a comment, said, "Well, you must need one of those to win then." And it's not true. They're all there to add sort of flavour. You don't have to include them, but they're there if you want to.
Because roughly they're on average twice the cost of any other normal size jack, roughly.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sort of ballpark. So, yes, you're getting a big model, and yes, it's very powerful, but you're paying the points to get that model.
And it can only be in one place at one time.
Yeah, although it isn't a big base.
Well, it is on a very big base.
120 mils on a 4x4. I love that metric to Imperial Conversion. Yeah, 120 mil base on a 4x4 table does take up quite a lot of real estate.
It does, yeah. I mean, that's base size has got to be an industry thing, hasn't it? Because the game.
Well, no, I mean you always go down, but you'll always buy your foot in. You'll buy a 6x4 2 mil ply. Madness. But there we go. Anyway, there's the divergence that we've. Nice tangent. I think what we'll do now is we'll give a quick run through of all the factions in War Machine.
Okay.
And sort of very broad brush of sort of what they do and what they're like.
Okay. Right. Well,
should we start with Signar?
Signar are I think the good guys of the Iron Kingdoms.
They're Ultramarines, aren't they?
Sort of. Yeah, I guess.
The 40K analogy.
Yeah, kind of.
Or Empire. For your fantasy issue.
Yeah, they're kind of the sort of good guys. They're sort of they're not invading people, and they're just kind of holding on to their own borders, and they're trying to sort of like find reasonably diplomatic solutions to stuff, but
they kick people in the face.
Yeah, they keep getting drawn into wars started by, you know, ugly aggressor types.
or everyone else in the world.
Or the other three factions, main factions, yeah. who are mean and evil to a man.
Yes. And what's kind of the thing or the theme behind the Signar there?
They're kind of the calendar balanced arms, so they've got access to a little bit of everything. They've got quite a good amount of shooting, but again, they've got sort of access to a lot of sort of different things, because I think all the four main factions have access to gunpowder in some or something similar in some form or another.
Yeah, they're all gunpowder sort of toting arms.
But they tend to be sort of the combined arms type faction, which is how I think of them. And sort of they are, you know, balanced.
Yeah, to me, the sort of the baseline. The there's nothing too outlandish. There's nothing too out there in it. Although they have sort of like, there's a bit of thing about electricity with them, which is always a bit boring.
Yeah, they've got a thing for electricity and sort of lightning bolts and things. But that's, I think, I still feel balanced kind of fits them.
Yes. I would say that they're the baseline kind of faction. They're your average guys. I mean, but yeah, totally, as we said, the game is balanced across the board.
It is.
I don't think anything really jumps out at people at any given time.
I mean, with the 2d6 dice system, and you might find that the difference between this model and that one model is this has a point extra of its melee attack ability. This one might have a point extra armor, or a point extra defense, or whatever it happens to be. Due to the system that they've picked with the dice and how the stat line works, they've got a good amount of variance within the game.
Yeah.
And so, like, the standard dude is probably a Signar trooper type model.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. So the next one, should we move on to the Protectorate of Menoth?
Yeah. And sort of, they are the zealoty type faction, driven to spread the word of Menoth, and therefore that means invading practically everybody along their border to convert them.
Well, if only they would all sort of, you know, embrace the religion, there would be no war, would there?
No, absolutely.
That's the way we're looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The world would be a happy place.
They certainly would be. They're heavily into, like, the purifying flames kind of deal.
Yes. Yes. If you like fire, this is probably where you're going to end up, if you like stompy robots with fire.
Yeah, they do seem to have quite a lot of sort of fire-based abilities, but they are kind of like, they're a buffing faction, I suppose.
Yes.
Where their base stuff doesn't necessarily look brilliant, but when you add in a caster and you add in some support solos and
support units,
their stuff gets a lot better. And I'm thinking Warjacks, and they have something called a choir of Benoth, which just makes the Warjacks significantly better than their points would suggest. Or yes. Their stats, yeah.
Yes. But as with everything in War Machine, there is a simple, well, simple fix, but there is a fix to that. You kill the choir and then the jacks are back to normal.
Absolutely, yeah. If you, with a lot of these kind of buffing kind of stuff, when you kill something, the other stuff loses the ability. So there's there's another game to be played there where, you know, positioning of your key pieces is sort of like can be very important in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless, of course, you don't mind sort of. One of the things I like about the game is that you can play it as like, you know, that kind of like highly fun, throw some figures on a table type of game with friends because the rule system is very good. Or you can take it to sort of that sort of high competitive standard that we see in some of the Masters events where, because the rule set's so good, you know, the game just works.
Yeah, the rule set certainly supports, and from my reading of it, even from back in the Mark 1 days, it was always written to be a tournament set of rules, because the rules are worded such a way that there is some ambiguity, but it's not written in a, well, yeah, you probably do it this way, it's written, you do it this way.
Yeah, there's no kind of, like, make a strength test against this model, but how, because that model doesn't have a strength characteristic, kind of, there's none of those sort of kind of grey areas that cause arguments. So you can play it in whatever manner you feel like, really.
Yeah. So that was meant off the more religious bent faction. The next one along the list is Kador.
Who are the Russians, effectively.
Yeah, these are your big sort of, and their robots really are the biggest, chunkiest, rustiest looking jacks out there, aren't they?
I mean, when I say Russians, they have a queen, a czarina, effectively, don't they? They have sort of like one of their characters is a prince, and it's all that kind of sort of.
It's the Romanovs crossing over into the Soviet Republic and stuff like that, isn't it?
Yes,
and they certainly see a lot of infantry generally in this faction.
Yeah, there's no light jacks because they don't do things like namby pamby light war jacks. Everything's very heavy and stuff. Yeah.
Big axes.
Yeah. They were
lots of armor.
Effectively, they were behind the technology curve in comparison to. In fact, Menoth and Kador were sort of behind the technology curve in the fluff in comparison to Signar, but and that's what drove the designs of their jacks and stuff. And then the troopers, you tend to get like Cossites and pikemen, and you know, it reminds me of sort of like a combination of like the Rus from ancient games. That's the kind of feel that it gives me.
Yeah, Mongol hordes and that sort of, all that sort of stuff's going on with it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're your dark, gritty faction to a certain extent. Still human, but you're dark and gritty.
Yeah. No, that's it, isn't it?
Which probably leads us, talking dark and gritty, leads us to Krix.
Which is the sort of undead lich type faction, and they've got sort of.
These are the bad guys.
Yeah, these are.
If Signar are the good guys, these are the bad guys.
Unless you're John Webb, these are definitely the bad guys. you know, we're zombies and sort of like mind controlled thralls and spectres raised from the dead. You know,
this is also in general terms your speed faction, isn't it?
Yeah, their jacks are a lot faster. They're fairly hard hitting, but not quite as durable. Not as many hitboxes as the other jacks.
Yeah, they're sort of the more glass hammer jacks rather than, if your Kador's is your brick that you know is you're never going to smash through. The Krix jacks are definitely the glass hammer. They're going to hit hard, but if they get caught, they tend to crumble.
Yeah, they have some very good light jacks, and again they've got a wide variety of options, I suppose, because they've got some fighty jacks and some shooty jacks, and you know, it's good, but they are definitely sort of the evil bad guys of the Iron Kingdom's world.
And that was those core four were the original core four from that started out the game, wasn't it, back in
absolutely
back in the day. And obviously they've been updated and carried on.
The kind of nice thing is that the original warcasters, those four original warcasters that they played, that they developed for the initial release of the game, still see play now.
Yes. I mean, certainly you see all the... I mean, to be fair, if you go to an event, you will see all the factions that we'll talk about in this show and the next show that we're going to do. I was just looking at the time. you will see most of them, not all, but you will see most of them events. And certainly if you go to any of the larger events, you will see all the factions represented.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe not by lots of people, but generally somebody will, if you go to a large event, somebody will have a list of the factions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think usually everything is there in some sort of form or another. There's usually a couple of people playing all of the factions and stuff. So they're all there represented.
Okay. What I think we'll do now, Rich, is we'll pause at this point and call a halt on this show.
Okay.
With those four, and what we'll do, we'll come back and we'll do the 2.5 factions left in War Machine. Ooh. And then go on to the Horde ones. Well, you know, mercenaries, the half a faction.
Yeah, I was going to say that's going to be a contentious issue.
Yeah, come on, bring your hat. It'll be fine. So I think that's what we'll do. So thanks for coming on again, Rich.
No problems.
All let's say is I've been Dave.
I'm Rich.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're @fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.